Welcome back, Deep Divers. We're diving deep into the Book of Ruth today.
Book of Ruth.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those books that a lot of people think is like a simple love story.
Right.
But, you know, our listeners reach out and said there's got to be more to it, right?
Yeah.
And they were right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're going to look at how this seemingly, you know, uncomplicated story actually connects to some pretty big ideas.
Big ideas, okay.
Like loyalty and faith.
Uh-huh.
And, get this, the roots of monarchy in the Bible.
Ooh, monarchy. Interesting.
Yeah, right. So I'm really excited for this one. We have a great expert with us today to help unpack it all.
Thanks for having me. It is a fascinating book. And yeah, it's more than just a love story. I mean, it takes place during this really turbulent time, the period of the judges.
Oh, yeah, the judges.
Right after Joshua, when the Israelites, you know, they're trying to settle into the promised land.
Yeah.
And things aren't going so well.
Not exactly peaceful.
No, not at all. It's more like, you know, a biblical Wild West kind of thing going on.
Oh, wow.
A lot of chaos.
Okay, so how does Ruth fit into all of that?
Well, that's the thing. You really have to understand that context. Like, all that uncertainty and violence, it really adds a whole other layer of meaning to her choices.
Okay, so paint the picture for us. Set the scene.
Okay, so we're in Bethlehem.
Bethlehem.
In Judah.
Uh-huh.
And there's this famine, right? It's ravaging the land.
Oh, no.
So this guy, Elimelech, he decides, you know what? I got to get my family out of here.
Okay.
So he's got his wife, Naomi.
Okay.
And their two sons, Mahlon and Chilion.
Mahlon and Chilion.
And they decide to move to Moab.
To Moab.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that right there is significant.
Why is that?
Well, because Moab, they were neighbors,
yeah.
Right? But they weren't Israelites.
Okay.
They had their own gods, their own customs, everything.
Interesting.
So Elimelech taking his family there, it was a big deal, you know, kind of pushing the boundaries.
Yeah.
Shows you how desperate they were.
Desperate times, yeah.
Yeah.
So then what?
Oh, no.
Elimelech dies in Moab.
Oh.
And then, to make matters worse, both of his sons die too.
Oh, wow, that's awful.
So you've got Naomi and her two daughters-in-law, Ruth and Orpah.
Okay.
Totally alone. Can you imagine?
Yeah, what a what a horrible situation.
Yeah, just awful. And this is where Ruth's character really shines.
Okay.
So remember, she's a Moabite woman. She doesn't have to stay with Naomi.
Yeah.
There's no obligation, really.
Yeah.
But she makes this incredible declaration. She says, where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay.
That's powerful.
Your people will be my people. And your God, my God.
Wow. That's probably one of the most famous expressions of loyalty in the whole Bible.
Oh, absolutely. It's incredible.
But it's more than just loyalty, right?
Oh, yeah. There's like a deeper meaning there. It's a huge cultural and spiritual shift.
Okay.
She's choosing to leave everything she knows, her homeland, her family, her gods.
Oh.
All to follow Naomi and embrace the God of Israel.
It's like a huge leap of faith. Huge leap of faith.
I mean, it makes you wonder, was there something else at work here?
Like what?
Some kind of, you know, unseen force guiding their steps.
Hmm. Interesting thought.
I mean, it's pretty coincidental that they go back to Bethlehem right during the barley harvest.
Yeah.
And then Ruth ends up gleaning in the field of Boaz,
mm-hmm.
who, of course, is a relative of Naomi's. What are the chances?
You're right. It is interesting how it all works out. The text doesn't come right out and say, God made this happen.
Yeah.
But there's definitely, you know, a sense that something's going on behind the scenes, you know, like a subtle hand weaving together all these seemingly random encounters. Makes you think about divine providence, how God might be orchestrating things even when we don't see it.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, it is. So Boaz notices Ruth. And it seems like he's impressed by her.
Yeah.
And not just by, you know, her work ethic.
He finds out about her loyalty to Naomi, and he's like, wow, he makes sure she's taken care of.
So it's like the beginning of a love story.
It seems like it, right?
Right. But you said earlier it's not quite that simple.
Well, there's this other layer, a cultural practice we need to understand. It's called levirate marriage.
Levirate marriage.
Yeah. It's laid out in Deuteronomy.
Okay, I'm all ears. Tell me about it.
So basically, if a man died without an heir, his brother had to marry the widow.
Really?
Yeah, to continue the family line, so the name would live on, and the widow would be cared for.
Okay.
But with Boaz and Ruth, it's not a perfect fit.
How so?
Well, Boaz isn't Elimelech's brother, just a relative.
Oh.
And get this, there's actually a closer relative who, according to the custom, has the first right to marry Ruth.
Hmm. So it's not a love triangle, but it's definitely more complicated than we first thought.
For sure.
So what happens? Does this other relative step up?
Initially, yeah, he seems interested, but there's a problem.
What's that?
Remember, Naomi's family had to sell their land.
When it went to Moab, yeah.
Right. So this closer relative, he's willing to marry Ruth, but he's not so keen on redeeming the land.
Why not?
It would mess with his own inheritance.
Ah, so now it's not just about romance. It's about economics and inheritance, too. Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah, it gives you a real glimpse into how things worked back then.
Yeah. So what does Boaz do?
Well, Boaz, he steps up. He's willing to do both.
Marry Ruth and redeem the land.
Yep. He totally understands what kinship responsibility really means.
What a guy. So Boaz and Ruth get married. The land's redeemed. Everybody's happy, right? End of story.
Not quite.
Oh, there's more.
There's more. The real climax is at the very end.
Okay.
And it comes in the form of something that might seem kind of boring. A genealogy.
The genealogy.
Yeah.
You mean that list of so-and-so begets so-and-so at the end?
That's the one. But trust me, it's important. This list of names is the key to unlocking a whole other level of meaning in the story.
Okay, you've got my attention. Why is this genealogy so important?
Well, it traces the lineage from Boaz and Ruth all the way back to Perez.
Perez, who's that?
The son of Judah.
Judah. As in, one of the 12 sons of Jacob. Okay, why is that connection so important?
Do you remember that prophecy in Genesis about Judah?
Refresh my memory.
It says, "The scepter will not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet until he comes to whom it belongs."
Wait a minute. Isn't that talking about
King David?
King David. You're right. And that's where this genealogy leads.
How?
Obed, the son of Boaz and Ruth, is the father of Jesse, who is the father of David.
Wow.
Okay. So the book of Ruth isn't just a love story. It's laying the groundwork for the whole Davidic monarchy. So we see God working behind the scenes, bringing about his plan for Israel, even amidst all the famine and uncertainty.
Exactly. It's about so much more than just a marriage. It's about lineage, destiny, and the unexpected ways God's purposes unfold. And there's another little connection to Judah that's interesting.
Okay.
When the villagers are blessing Boaz and Ruth, they pray that their house would be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah.
Tamar. Now there's a story, another deep dive right there. Oh. But how does Tamar's story connect to Ruth's?
Well, both stories show how God works in these messy, complicated situations.
Okay.
Often using unexpected people to fulfill his purposes.
Interesting. So what about Ruth herself? I mean, what's so significant about her character?
Well, the book subtly links her to the ideal woman described in Proverbs 31.
Okay.
They're both Eshet Hael, a worthy woman.
Eshet Hael.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting? It's the same Hebrew word used to describe valiant warriors.
So Ruth's strength is a different kind of strength then.
Exactly. It's the quiet strength of loyalty, resilience, and faith.
It's amazing how much depth and meaning there is in this story.
Yeah. It's like peeling back the layers of an onion. Each layer reveals something new.
Okay. We've covered a lot of ground here. Mm-hmm. But we need to take a break. We'll be right back.
So we've got this incredible woman, right? This Esh Hale, showing this remarkable strength and faith.
Yeah.
And her story is like woven into this big narrative about King David's lineage.
It is. It makes you wonder, you know, is there a connection between Ruth's character and like the qualities that would eventually be embodied in David himself?
Wow, that's a really interesting thought. I mean, the book of Ruth doesn't directly make that connection.
Yeah.
But it's not hard to imagine that the qualities we see in Ruth, like her loyalty and her perseverance and her willingness to, you know, act justly,
yeah,
might have somehow shaped the character of her great-grandson, the future king.
Like a spiritual legacy passed down through the generations.
That's a cool way to put it.
And speaking of legacy, you know, the book doesn't shy away from the messier parts of family history.
No, it doesn't.
The genealogy itself includes some pretty scandalous figures.
Yeah, we already talked about Tamar.
And her unconventional path to motherhood.
Right.
And then there's Perez and Zerah, her twin sons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their dramatic entrance into the world.
Yeah, it reminds us that even the, you know, the greatest heroes, the most important figures in the Bible, they come from these, like, flawed, complicated families. Yeah.
And the genealogy doesn't try to hide that.
No.
It embraces the messiness, acknowledges that God's plan often works through, you know, imperfect people, less than ideal circumstances.
So maybe it's saying it's not about being perfect.
Right.
It's about, you know, trying to do what's right, even when you're surrounded by difficult situations.
Exactly.
And challenging family dynamics. just like Ruth.
Just like Ruth. It's a powerful message of hope, you know.
Mm.
It reminds us that God can work through anyone,
yeah,
regardless of their background, their past mistakes.
Yeah.
It encourages us to see the potential for greatness, even in the most unexpected places.
So what does this all mean for us today?
That's the question, isn't it?
Why should we care about this Moabite woman who lived thousands of years ago?
Right.
What can her story teach us about, you know, living faithfully in our own modern world?
That's the amazing thing about these ancient texts. They still speak to us.
Yeah.
In such profound ways. Ruth's journey challenges us to think about our own definitions of loyalty.
Family, faith.
What are we willing to sacrifice for those we love?
How do we see God's hand at work in our own lives?
Yeah, even when it's not obvious.
Right. It's like that saying, God writes straight with crooked lines.
That's a good one.
Ruth's story is a testament to that truth. Her path, it wasn't straightforward.
No.
But through her choices, her unwavering faith, she became this pivotal figure in God's grand narrative.
Makes you wonder, maybe our own seemingly insignificant choices, our everyday acts of, you know, faithfulness, kindness, maybe they're part of something much bigger than we realize.
Exactly. The book of Ruth invites us to embrace that possibility, that God is weaving together this tapestry of redemption and hope, even in the midst of our, you know, messy, complicated lives. And that's a message that speaks across cultures and millennia.
Absolutely. So for everyone listening, what stands out to you the most in this deep dive? What part of Ruth's story resonates with you?
Yeah, think about that. And here's another question to ponder. If this seemingly simple love story is subtly promoting the idea of monarchy, how does that challenge our assumptions about power, leadership, and God's role in establishing authority?
Lots to think about. We'll pick up right there after a quick break.
You know, it's kind of crazy to think that a book that's often seen as, you know, just a sweet romantic tale is actually saying something about leadership and even like the nature of power.
It really is. You know, at the beginning of this deep dive, I never thought we'd end up talking about monarchy.
Yeah.
And God's role in establishing authority.
Me neither. But you've given us a lot to think about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like the connection to the Davidic line, Ruth's status as, what was it? Eshet-Hale.
Eshet-Hale.
Yeah. And the subtle kind of subversion of social and religious boundaries. And now this, you know, thought-provoking question about monarchy. It's really changed how I see the Book of Ruth. That's great to hear. That's what we want these deep dives to do. Help uncover those hidden layers and appreciate just how rich these ancient texts really are.
Absolutely.
Right.
So to get back to that question you asked, how does the Book of Ruth challenge how we think about power and leadership,
yeah,
and God's role in establishing authority? What are some things we should be thinking about as we go back and reread the story?
Well, first of all, the book gives us a very specific model of leadership in Boaz.
Okay.
He's not a king or a military leader, but he has the qualities that are essential for good leadership.
Like what?
Like justice and compassion.
Yeah.
Integrity and a willingness to go above and beyond, you know?
Yeah, yeah. He's also portrayed as someone who, like, listens to the needs of his people.
He does.
Especially those who are, you know, vulnerable, like Ruth.
Yes, absolutely. And he doesn't, like, lord his power over others, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Instead, he uses his position to protect people and provide for them. It's very different from the often brutal ways we see power use in the ancient world.
Both in the Bible and other historical accounts.
Right.
So Boaz is a different kind of leader, one that's rooted in righteousness and a deep concern for, you know, the well-being of the community.
Exactly. And it makes us think about what we think leadership should look like, both in the world and within, you know, our religious institutions.
What qualities do we value in our leaders?
Right. Are we looking for people who want to serve or who want to be served?
That's a great question. And it's relevant to all of us, you know?
Yeah.
It's not just for people in, like, official leadership positions.
No.
I mean, we all have some degree of power and influence in our relationships, our communities, our workplaces.
Mm.
The Book of Ruth shows us that we need to consider how we're using that power.
Are we using it to lift others up or to put them down?
Yeah. And then there's the question of God's role in, you know, establishing authority. The Book of Ruth doesn't shy away from the idea that God is involved in what happens, even in the little things.
Yeah. He's orchestrating events, guiding people's steps, and working towards his larger plan.
It makes you think, you know, if God is so involved in how kings rise and fall, what does that mean for how we see political power? Are we supposed to just accept whoever's in charge, regardless of, you know, their character or actions? Or should we be trying to figure out God's will and work towards a more just and equitable society?
Those are tough questions, and the Book of Ruth doesn't give us easy answers. But it does give us a way to think about these things. It reminds us that God is working through history, often in surprising ways. And we're called to pay attention to his leading, to try to, you know, align our lives with his purposes.
So even a story that seems simple can have these deep truths that make us think hard about our lives and the world around us.
Exactly. And that's what I love about these old texts. They still speak to us across, you know, centuries, offering wisdom and guidance and inspiration for our journeys of faith.
This has been an amazing deep dive. Seriously, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us.
You're very welcome. I've really enjoyed exploring the Book of Ruth with you.
And to all of you listening, thank you for joining us on this journey. We hope this deep dive has inspired you to go back and read the Book of Ruth, to see it with new eyes and appreciate its timeless message. Until next time, keep exploring.